Hi, Rhonda, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rhonda.
Thanks, you guys, and thanks for asking, and thanks, Murphy. This is like a big family reunion for me, with family up here and family back here and family up here. And Cal's trying to give me money, which is kind of waving money. It was a little, almost 20 years ago that this was the first place that I actually spoke. It was actually for a WikiPa function, or WikiPa 4 back in the day. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny how, you know, the service work has come full, kind of full circle in a way. Anyway, I'm Rhonda, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rhonda.
My sobriety date is August 14th, 2010. My home group is EDI, BDI, Easy Does It But Do It, out in Oregon, representing here. So, I brought up these note cards because, you know, in the beginning of when I start talking, I get the nervous jitters, that stuff. And so, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. I come from a large family. Many of you guys know that I have cousins. Just about every time I turn around, I have a cousin or a family member that I run into. With that large family, they helped keep me alive. They helped raise me. I come from a long line of alcoholics. I was raised by a single mom who was an alcoholic and an addict, who is very, very active. And the whole party scene, you know, 70s, 80s, yeah, I grew up in that. And the bars were, you know, pretty much home. You know, dinner was the hors d'oeuvres, or if there were hors d'oeuvres in the bar, that's where I usually had dinner. And so the lifestyle that I lived in and lived it around, I kind of grew up thinking that that was kind of normal, and thinking, oh, okay, well, this is what it's like. You know, I get out of school, I go home, my mom comes and gets me, we go to the bar, you know, we stay there until whenever, I go sleep in her car, and I wake up in a ditch a few hours later with her at the wheel sleeping. And this was kind of like a no big deal thing for a long time. And then, family members stepped in at many different pivotal points in my life. I had an aunt that took care of me as a baby, you know, and built that baby relationship, that baby bond, because my mom wasn't able to do that. I love my mom dearly today. We have a phenomenal relationship. I thank this program, I thank my sponsor, I thank many people that have been pivotal in rebuilding and rebuilding that relationship, my higher power most of all, because she was more like a sister or more like a friend or kind of my daughter at different points in our life. You know, in our lives, we've really kind of helped raise each other. And so it was my grandma for me that really had that maternal role, had that maternal instinct, introduced me to my higher power, taught me about God, taught me that there was something bigger out there that was actually there to help take care of me. And that bond, that relationship with her and her introducing me to my higher power has proven pivotal for me in my life, because I know without a shadow of a doubt that there's a reason why I'm here. I don't quite get it, because there are many times where I should have been dead. And I seriously get that with my core. You know, I don't know why I'm here. There have been times I've been pissed off and like, what? You know, just what? And my higher power has just really carried me through at times. Violence, physical abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse, those things were quite normal. I never really felt safe with people, places, or things, and my fear of people, places, and things is not quite as an average person's would be. My fear of people is almost non-existent. You know, like, I'm not afraid of getting in people's faces. I'm not afraid of confrontation. I'm not afraid of big burly guys. And what's funny too is that when I came into the program and when I was 19, and I'm kind of bouncing around here because I'm a little nervous, but, you know, they're come into the rooms downstairs, and they're smoking cigarettes, and we're talking, and, you know, they're pounding the tables, and they're like, I drank more than you, you know, whatever, and I just sat there and went, okay, and I'd scooch a little closer to them, instead of being fearful of them, and them trying to, like, I would sit there looking, I'm like, yeah, really? That's kind of cool. You know, and I'd get in their face, and they would look at me like, who are you? You know, who's this snotty little kid, you know? But I'm really grateful for those experiences. So I started drinking and using when I was 11. Started smoking cigarettes. Started acting out and realizing that the lifestyle that I was living in was not okay, and that life could be better. I could actually feel safe in certain areas with certain people, and safe was not a normal thing for me, so walking through and having people be genuinely nice and actually care about me, I was like, what do you want? You know, and just this real angry, real pissed off attitude at everything and everyone, because I didn't trust anyone. I couldn't, because any time I did, I got hurt or something happened. And so I would use alcohol and drugs to get out of right here, right now, because I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle you, I couldn't handle me, I couldn't handle everything. And so I would shut down, and there were only two real emotions that I felt, which was anger or nothing, you know, and I was totally okay with that and thought that that was right, and I thought that that was okay. And, you know, I'd watch these other kids at school and seeing how their lives were, and I couldn't get it. I didn't get it. I was like, so I'm missing something here, you know, and I couldn't really relate with other kids in school. I couldn't get near people in school because every time I would get close to people, we'd move. You know, it was like almost every year we would pick up and move somewhere else. And so my relationships with people would only go so far, or my friendships with people would only go so far. And it caused a lot of pain, and it caused a lot of anguish. I, you know, dealt with a lot of abandonment, a lot of people, you know, of just, you know, I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. Or I'm going to walk away from you before you have the chance to hurt me, type stuff. And so with the drinking and the using and the people that I was around growing up around, I never had to buy alcohol. I never had to buy drugs. It was always available. And if it wasn't, I knew where to find it, and I knew how to take it without getting caught. And then when I was about 12 years old, I got caught stealing a car. And so the state decided to get involved, and that was my chance to say, you know, yeah, I hate my life, I hate what's going on in my life and whatever. And so the state decided to take over, and they put me in a group home. And they, part of being in that group home is I had to go to AA meetings. And so they would take me over to Northport, a group of girls. We'd go over to Northport, and we would wait for the person to drive off and leave. And we'd go outside across the street to the church. I have a special tree out in the front yard that we would all go stand under and smoke a bowl, and then go sit in the meeting and smoke our cigarettes and go, God, you guys are nuts. You know, glad I'm not one of you guys. And we're sitting there, wow, this is crazy, you know. But then, you know, those seeds, the seeds that they talk about getting planted, they got planted. And it was really kind of cool because I learned in AA by, you know, just, it was like almost like osmosis, really, of this is a safe place. You know, by following these steps and following and doing the footwork, I can be happy, joyous, and free. Excuse me? What the F is that? You know, I had no grid. I had no concept. So, you know, I was in and around and out, in and around and out as a kid. And I was able to go back to my mom's place because I was able to, you know, con my way into going back to my mom's, and she was able to con her way to make it look like she had cut down the drinking, so she was okay. And we drank and used together quite a bit, and, you know, my friends thought that was really cool. They were like, your mom's really cool, man. We can come over, we can get baked, we can, you know, drink all the alcohol we want, we're not getting in trouble, and, you know, your mom's really cool. And I would sit back going, yeah, yeah, thanks. Thinking to myself, where's the mom that's supposed to kick my rear end? Where's the mom that's supposed to love me enough to tell me no? And so I had sworn to myself that if I were to ever have children, which at that point I swore I wasn't gonna, because I didn't want my kids or kids, I didn't want to bring any children into this world that would end up having to deal with the life that I lived. And so I was adamant about it. And my dad, I didn't meet my dad until I was 16. And I'm going to segue off of that for a minute, because these are pivotal relationships that, you know, these are primary reasons why I drank. You know, these are primary, you know, these foundational things, I didn't have them. And so in order to escape and to stop feeling and to stop dealing with everything, I needed to get out of here. I needed to get out of my mind. And so I would run to alcohol and drugs and just be okay in that moment. I'm reminded of a speaker. I've been listening to him lately, Earl. And I heard him a little while ago, and I was like, yeah, I can completely relate with that. He goes, I'm addicted to whatever you got. You want to go up, we'll go up. You want to go down, we'll go down. And I went, yeah, I can completely relate with that. Whatever's right in front of me. And, you know, I would drink as much as I possibly could, smoke a bowl so I could go to sleep, because my brain was just constant. You know, I couldn't slow it down. I couldn't get away from it for 5 minutes. So that was my escape, to get away from it. And so in all that, you know, these relationships, these people, I didn't know my dad. I knew that he was a biker. I knew that I had a half-brother that was older than me and a half-sister that was younger than me, and we all have different moms. But there was a man that was a father figure to me, that was like a father to me. He was in and out of a relationship with my mother from when I was 8 to 16, and, you know, he was the male figure in my life. Granted he was a drug dealer. Granted he, you know, not the shining best citizen of the Madison area, but, and it was strange because, you know, through all this partying, through all this stuff, the man would take his mother to church on Sunday. He'd go get her from the nursing home and drag me with him to church. And I'm sitting there, you know, as a teenager at different points going, why are you taking me here? You know, this is so hypocritical. What are you doing? And I didn't get it. I couldn't get it. And now I get it. It's interesting. But he was like the safest person I could trust. I mean, really, that had my back, that I knew that when I completely screwed up, he was there to love me unconditionally, to care about me unconditionally. He was there. So I had gotten out of this group home, was, you know, in and out of high school. I went to my first year of high school at Chavez City High School, an alternative high school, and then bounced all over the place to different schools. But when I was 16, just after my 16th birthday, he was murdered. I say he was murdered. The coroner's report says that he killed himself. It's tough. Tough stuff. But losing him, you know, it's like losing a parent, from what I hear from other people and I understand from other people, you know, is that it's your foundation, you know, and my foundation was completely rocked by that. You know, I was so self-will and so filled with anger and so filled with angst, and I was just fighting everything and everyone. And during the time that I was in the girls' group home that I was in, I was told statistically by the time I would turn 18, I wouldn't make it to my 18th birthday. I'd be dead. And I'm just like, yeah, whatever. F you, F your statistics. Have a nice life, you know. And this woman was sitting down with me. She's like, no, you don't get it. You don't get it. Okay, whatever, you know. And I was an angry young person. And when he died, that was a huge shift for me. That blew my mind. I was like, I don't have anyone anymore. Within 24 hours, my mom is drunk. I'm back at my place. I'm high out of my mind, and she comes in and she's in a blackout. We're both just wrecked because he's gone. He was her backbone as well. Although they were in and out and in and out, not in a relationship, not in a relationship, he was always there. And she was in this blackout and she came at me. And came at me with all she had, and all she could say was, I'm effing kill you. I don't know if she, I'm positive she didn't see me, physically see me. I think in that blackout, you know, you can only imagine what's going on in your mind, in a person's mind, and I can relate deeply because I've been in those blackouts and come out of them and gone, I can't believe, did I do, oh my, are you serious? And it wrecked both of us. And so I had to go back to the court system, and I actually went over to Briar Patch, and they're still around, and I'm really grateful they are. And man, if I had a lot of money, I would be handing them hand over fist money just to help them, because they were pivotal. So I went to this place because I was forced to go to AA meetings there at different times. And the director and I were sitting down, and I explained everything to her, and I told her, I was like, look, this is what's going on. I need help. I need to get out of here. Help me. And she's like, I will help you. And this woman was blind. I don't know if she's still there, but she was blind. She had other physical defects that she was dealing with, but that didn't limit her from what she was doing. And she became a very inspirational part of my life as well. Because I watched how people that went through adverse things could rise up and become something, someone amazing, you know. And so I'm sitting there with her, and she contacted social services, and they're like, send her home. You know, she's being a snot, you know, she's saying whatever, and she just needs to go home. And so she gets off the phone with me, and or off the phone with them, and she's like, I don't know what to tell you. You know, they want you to go back home. And I said, what's their phone number? And she goes, what do you mean? And I said, I'm going to get on the phone with this person, you know, because I'm finally taking action. I'm finally going, you know what, I've had enough of this. I want help. I want out. I need help. And so I got on the phone with the social worker, and I said, look, you have 10 minutes to get down here. Otherwise, I'm going to go down the street to the convenience store, and I'm going to rob it. And I'm going to hurt someone. If that's what it takes in order for me to get some help around here, that's what I'll do. He was there in 10 minutes. You know, is that odd, or is that God? You know, it's something my sponsor said. And so I've always had this fight to survive, you know. But going through what I've gone through, you know, the easier, softer way for me at different points were just to drink, just to use, because it gets so crazy up in here, you know, and then all the extra stuff that's going on out here, it's just like, oh, no, you know, I just got to let it be. So, So I didn't graduate high school, and I went and lived with my half sister, her mother, and her mother's husband. And long story short, her mom got involved with the realtor, and I can't believe I'm saying this and it's being recorded. But long story short, we all ended up living together, and this gentleman ended up being that next male role model to step in. Like, where my higher power just put this man in my life to help me see that men could actually be safe, because I had this adamant hatred and adamant just, you know, not very nice things in my mind. And so he helped me get my HSED. He helped me learn how to budget money. He helped me learn how to become a functioning adult. And then I watched alcohol, the progression of alcoholism, roll him over and spit him out. And I was just like, wow. You know, and I'm in the midst of my own progression at that point. And I ended up pregnant at the age of 17. Had her when I turned 18. After 20 days after I turned 18, I had her. And she's one of the biggest gifts of my life. Her father and I were not married, obviously, and he came back with a lottery ticket and said, okay, here's the deal. We win, you'll keep it. We lose, you get rid of it. And I took the lottery ticket and said, F you, F your lottery ticket, I'll do this myself. Have a nice life. And started drinking and using a little while after she was born. And left him, and on her, I believe it was about her second birthday, the night before, I had been up all night drinking and using and on a massive cocaine binge, and the next day was her second birthday party, and my family came over for her birthday party. And I am just, you could tell, I was wrecked. It was just wrong. And they're like, Rhonda, nice to see you. Shaking their head like, what are you thinking? You know? And the whole fear of becoming my mother, the whole fear of becoming a bad parent, the whole, you know, all of those fears of just doing the things that were done to me, to her, you know, that whole concept, it just made me sick. And so I reached out to this guy that I saw get eaten up, spit out, who got himself involved in AA. And I saw that change. I saw that shift. And I'm like, I know that's where I need to be. You know, the seeds that were planted, the things that happened along the way, I knew that without a shadow of a doubt that this is where I need to be. I need to stop drinking. I need to stop using. I need to pull my life together, if not for myself, for my child as well. So I did. Started coming to meetings, and it was my second meeting. Yeah, I'm sitting there, and I've got this attitude. Just a little bit of an attitude, and I'm sitting there smoking my cigarettes downstairs, you know, and I've seen this chick that comes in, and she's boisterous and loud, and I'm like, you know, I can kind of relate to what she's saying. And she comes up to me at the end of a meeting, and she's like, so, you have a sponsor? And I said, no. She goes, well, I'm your sponsor. And I'm looking at her. You know, out of anybody in this world, it's like divine intervention. I'm telling you, because if it were anyone else, you know, have a nice life. And it's so cool to see how my higher power has placed people in my life. It gives me huge goosebumps. because she's helped me. I'm going to cry. Ah, she's helped me, not knowingly. You know, she's doing the work. She's doing the deal. She's doing the best she can. And she's helping me learn how to live. She's helping me learn how to like people and to appreciate people and not be so effing pissed off all the time. You know, she's helping me rebuild relationships. And, you know, I'm a little stubborn. You know, and it takes a little bit for me to listen at times, you know, and I would start going and doing the steps in my own order, and then she would kind of go, tink, okay, you're going to listen? And, oh, all right, fine. Then this one time, it was before I'd actually done my fourth and my fifth and my sixth and my seventh, and I went and did an amends with someone that I love dearly, love her dearly. And I had wrecked our friendship really bad. And I was so amped to make everything right. I was so amped to finally go, I've got a name for this, and I'm sorry for treating you the way I did. I'm sorry for doing what I did. I'm really sorry. And she was just like, what you did was unacceptable. And she just dragged me around. You know, she could have dragged me around for a while behind a car and it would not have done justice. And I learned a really big lesson to listen to my sponsor and I got to do the amends the right way later with her, and luckily that relationship has been rebuilt. You know, and that's a God thing, and that's a willingness thing. That's something that this program has helped provide. You know, by taking that bit of willingness and that desire to have a better life, to not live in here and just be absolutely nuts all the time, to be happy, joyous, and free, like the promises talk about. I wanted that. I heard that after every meeting for the longest time, and I'm like, I want that. I want the, you know, just everything in me. I want that. I want to know what that looks like. So I was around for a while, and, you know, long story short, I met someone in the program. We got married, and I'll do this as gently as I possibly can. He started proselytizing in meetings and letting people know certain things that, you know, that clearly go against the traditions and concepts and all that stuff. And people were gentle and then not so gentle and then just outright rude with him to let him know that that was just not okay. And many people came to me and said, Rhonda, you need to stop him. And I'm like, ah. Let me see what I can do, you know. And then it came down to an ultimatum of, you either come with me and go to church or you stay in AA and we get divorced. And that we were just newly married, and I'm thinking white picket fence. I'm thinking, you know, pink fluffy clouds. Life's going to be great because we're married. Wow. Yeah, huge eye-opener. So three children later, three beautiful daughters later. Very rough relationship. Very thankful for the church that we were actively involved. Thankful because I was able to keep that connection with my higher power. I never once turned away from God during that time. And I actually honed in on that relationship and really cultivated it and really worked with it. You know, and just, it's like you and me, God. And, you know, these people were telling me, no, it's your husband, then God. And I'm like, no, it's me and God. Have a nice time with that, you know, and just that rebellious attitude is still quite very much there. It's something I'm still working very hard on. So we went through a lot of ups and downs and went through counseling and went through pastors and went through family stuff, and it just, you know, I just kept pushing through because I wanted that pink fluffy cloud. I wanted that white picket fence. I wanted it all to work. I want, you know, and I was willing to do anything to make this marriage work. And I lost myself. My family, my mother was like, where's my daughter? Where'd my daughter go? Because I want her back now. knock it off. Just like, okay, I'm still right here. She goes, no, you're not. You've turned into somebody you're not, and you're doing things that you normally wouldn't do. Where'd your backbone go? What? You know, some things happened. And I was forced with a choice to either choose to stand by my husband or stand by my children. And I chose to stand by my children. And the pink fluffy cloud and the white picket fence just kind of swirled up into a tornado. And it was, you know, you go into survival mode. I went into survival mode, and I got us through it, and I got us moved out to Oregon with family. I've never lived in Oregon in my life. I'm used to the east side of Madison or Madison in general, and out there it's just like a totally different universe. That's the best way I could describe it. I'm used to neighbors, I'm used to neighborhood, I'm used to that. And I'd move out there and I would see a neighbor and I'd be like, hey, and they'd be scurry and run back into their house like, she said hi to me. What's the deal? And so I got to know my neighbor across the street. And I always saw her outside. She had a cigarette in one hand and beer in the other. And I got to know her because she was friendly, she was nice, and she was willing to talk to me, and she wouldn't go running into her house like, and so we got to talking, got to hanging out, you know, and get to know each other. It was great, and we'd sit there and smoke cigarettes, and she's like, you want a beer? And I'm like, oh, wait, drink, not. Oh, okay, no problem, you know. Come over again. You want a beer? Oh, no, I really don't drink. Oh, okay. Come over again. You want a beer? Oh, sure, why not? In my mind, I'm thinking, I hear JJ in my head. You're going to try some controlled drinking, huh? Let's see how that works for you. She's with me, even though she wasn't with me, she's in my head. It was great. It was scary. It killed my drinking. It sucked. So I had two beers with this woman, and I love her dearly. Love her. Had two beers with her, woke up with the worst migraine ever. You know, what's the problem? You know, I used to be able to drink people, you know, drink and blah, blah, blah. I had two beers. What is this? Physical allergy, maybe? You know, and then, so then I find out, yes, it is the alcoholic physical allergy, and yes, I'm allergic to hops. And so I go to my neighbor, and I'm like, I got this awful hangover. She goes, oh, well, I'll go pick up a bottle of wine for you tonight and come on over. Oh, okay, that sounds good. So I went over that night. I drank the entire bottle of wine. She drank her six-pack. We went down to the main tap, closed the main tap, and we were up until I don't know when. And I woke up the next day just fine. And off I went. And, you know, fast forward a little bit. You know, the progression. It fast forwards really fast, really hard. I ended up dating a guy that I shouldn't have been dating, you know, because it wasn't a good idea. And we're hanging out and we're partying, and some of his friends come up, and his friend's smoking a bowl, you know. And I was thinking, I'm just gonna drink, and I'm gonna control this, right? Because, you know, I'm gonna try this controlled drinking thing. I'm gonna prove my sponsor wrong. So he comes up and he's like, you want some? I said, no, I don't smoke pot. Oh, you one of those anti-pot, blah, 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 you know, you think you're, you know. And I'm like, no, man, no. You give me the bowl, I'm going to want a line of Coke in 5 minutes. He looks at me like, what? Looks at the guy that I was dating. He's like, dude, she's nuts. I'm like, yeah, I kind of am. And he's like, whatever, and he smokes his bowl. And then we go back to this guy's place, we're partying, and then all of a sudden, everybody disappeared. And this lady and I were talking, we're like, where'd everybody go? We go downstairs to the basement, and guess what? They're snorting. And I look at them, and I'm like, told ya. And they're like, you want some? And I'm like, no. But then within 6 months, it happened quickly. within that, I started taking antidepressants because I was depressed, dealing with postpartum depression, postpartum stuff, part of my story, whatever. The antidepressants stopped working. You know, I was drinking and using a lot, and the antidepressants just stopped working, and I didn't understand what the problem was. I mean, it just wasn't helping anymore. So I call my doctor up, and I'm like, look, you know, I've been on this one for quite a few years. He's like, yeah, you have. Maybe we should switch you to another one. Okay, so I switched to another one. I call him up a few weeks later, and I'm like, you know, I'm having real massive anxiety. And he's like, yeah, I've got something for you for that. And so I start taking that on top of drinking and using. And I don't understand why the world's starting to just completely fall apart, and, you know, my life's falling apart, and I'm just not getting it. And I hear JJ in my head, and I'm thinking, and I'm kicking myself, and I'm like, God, what am I doing? Help me. What is this? And trying to maintain and trying to hold it all together, you know, because we got to spin these plates that, you know, we got this going, you know, and I got to make everything look good, right? And my plates came spinning down really hard one night because one of the cousins I grew up with, she was dating someone and they had a child together, and a little while later, we didn't really know this, but there was a lot of domestic abuse, and he ended up killing her and their daughter and his ex-girlfriend and the daughter that he had with her. And more tragic, right? More tragedy. That wrecked me. It wrecked me really bad because I didn't see it. You know, I dealt with all this abuse. I dealt with all this stuff. I dealt with all the manipulation and the mind games and the relationship garbage. I thought I would see it, you know, and I didn't see it in this guy. And she was murdered. They were murdered. And it completely floored me. It freaked me out. It sent our entire family reeling. And it was part of my bottom. Because, you know, she felt more like a sister than a cousin, like a distant relation that you go see once in a while. We all grew up together. You know, at different points in my life, you know, I was around my cousins, different cousins, because my family had to raise me with different, you know, and it was just like, more like a sister, a sibling that was gone now. And so I started drinking more and using more, and came up with this really awesome idea of putting a benefit together, and went to her sister, and we built up this benefit, and we created a benefit, and within a month and a half from when they were murdered, on her birthday, we held a benefit in memory of all four of these people. My cousin Tracy, her daughter Deja, Amber, and Mazea. And it brought the Madison community together like I've never seen in my entire life. I never knew that I could have a hand in something that huge. And all I'm looking for is God. You know, why? How? Why wasn't it me instead? It should have been me instead. Why? You know, I don't get this. And when the benefit was all over and the money went to Dave and everything was good and, you know, all the ducks are in a row, that's when I went. And I checked out and I kept drinking, I kept using, and it all fell apart really fast, really hard, really bad, to the point where I needed help really bad and I didn't know where to go because I was hearing in my head, you know, almost, it almost felt really, really crazy, more than the crazy than I normally have, of you should just kill yourself. You should just kill yourself. There's no reason why you should be here. Your kids would be better off. Your family would be better. You know, and I'm hearing this garbage, and I'm like, no, 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 I need help. So I reach out for help, and the help is not available, and I ended up reaching out to my family, who's devastated, who's hurting, and I go to my family, and I'm like, I need help. I need help going to the psych ward. And they're like, what? What do you mean you need to go to the psych ward? You know, and they take me to the psych ward and they're pissed. They're like, how dare you want to kill yourself? Who do you think you are? And I'm going, no, you don't understand. I need help. I know I can get help here. I know I won't die. when I'm in there. They'll help me stay safe long enough to get my shit together, to get back up on my feet, to get back into AA, do whatever I gotta do. And so I'm sitting with the psychiatrist, and he's like, he's got his script pad, you know, and I'm already loaded up on meds, and I'm already loaded up on drugs and alcohol, and he's like, so, yeah, you have PTSD, you have major depression, and he's dropping off all these scripts on me, and I'm overloaded, and I'm sitting in there, and my other cousin comes in, and she's like, I can't be around you anymore. You know, my family separated themselves from me, and I just couldn't get it, because it was like talking to a blank wall. I left the psych ward, ended up drinking and using again. Hello? Was I going to get it? And I went to the therapist, the outside counseling therapist, and told her, you know, filled her in, and the therapist said, you need to go back to AA or you're going to die. All right? Okay. But I drank and used again. Went back to my job, ended up quitting my job and putting myself back in the psych ward because I knew that it was completely uncontrollable and I had no way. I had no self-ability to pull myself up by my bootstraps at that point. I had no self-ability to do anything but get myself into that hospital to get right. And I called my sponsor and she came up, and thank God she's still here. You know, because I come back and there's so many that are gone. And I'm like, wow. Wow. So she came back up and she helped me walk back through, come back in the doors. And I'm doing this to the best of my ability. You know, when I hear my self-will or that snotty little brat that still pops up in my head, you know, it's like I got to correct myself. Every time that my self-will gets in the way and I get pissed off and angry and obstinate, you know, where's God? Oh, yeah. You know, by reaching out to others in AA, I've been able to get glimpses of that happy, joyous, and free. By service work, I've been able to get out of myself, out of my head, out of the craziness in my brain, and help other people and see how this program and how all of us working together help build each other up. There's so much that I'm so thankful for, you know, to actually be here, to be sober almost 20 years later, you know, to be given this gift one more time and knowing that I don't want to find out if I have another relapse in me, because I have no doubt in my mind that I will be dead. I don't want to find out. And I never want to go back there again because it was just so absolutely miserable. I couldn't. You know, I understand how by not working the steps and just going through the motions of becoming stagnant within this program, how empty it can become. I've learned how that when I'm taking the right action, I'm listening to my sponsor, I'm working the steps with my sponsor, I'm working with other alcoholics, I'm doing this to the best of my ability, I'm free. I'm freaking free. And so the garbage that pops up in my mind that goes boo, I call my sponsor and I'm like, what the ma? And she's like, stop it. She brings me back to earth. And then she talks about the steps. She talks about her experience. And she helps me see that I don't have to do this by myself. And I'm very thankful for that. There's so much. You know, I really wanted to go through more of the steps and everything. And I've only got a few minutes. But I'm just incredibly grateful that you're all here. It felt like a great big family reunion. Family of extended family. Because when I couldn't love myself many different times, you guys, you did love me anyway. And you helped me how to love myself and to like actually realize that I could become a woman of dignity that it talks about in the book. And to walk through life and not have to be a victim of my circumstances or my past. From being that kid back then, I've had some really awesome career positions. I've been able to get my associate's degree in business. I'm this close to getting my bachelor's degree in business, but due to some physical issues that I've had from coming back in, because, you know, our bodies can only handle so much. And when I came back this time, my body let me know that it was thoroughly pissed. You know, headbutting Marines in bars is not a good idea. You think you're tough. Okay, let me show you how tough I am, right? I mean, just the inflated ego, the inflated yuck. I'm just so glad that I don't have to deal with that. I don't have to deal with that today. I can be myself. I can be real. I can be human. I can be honest. I've dealt with the worst physical pain that I've ever dealt with in my life. I thought giving birth to 4 children was hard. I was in car accidents and stuff like that, and the physical abuse that I've endured, I've learned through the medical field that because of all of that, that's where this physical pain is stemming from, and I've had physical stuff that's come out of it. I've had neck surgery in this bout of sobriety, and I'm now dealing with a heart issue, and I'm turning 40 in August. You know, what is that? You know, normally I would, if I didn't have this program, if I didn't have you guys, if I didn't have my higher power, I'd be drunk. You know, there's no question in my mind. So I'm grateful that I can walk through, and I'm grateful to still be alive, to be able to talk about it. I'm grateful that I can be of service and of help to other people who have so graciously helped me over the years, and to give back a little bit of what I was given. Is that okay? Thanks.
Here, if anybody wants to make comments or...